Before Evans and I could enjoy the first fruits of our labor, yet another form of hazing was to confront us, namely the impact of Charlie Bludon's bombs. Bludon was not the sort of man who would hire a new production team and simply turn things over to them. He had his own ideas about what would make a successful movie, and he was intent on implementing them. The results were devastating. For one thing, Bludon, as a European, venerated schmaltzy Hollywood musicals that he was insistent on reviving. His flights of fancy resulted in some truly bizarre and hugely expensive turkeys, such as Paint Your Wagon and Darling Lily. In Paint Your Wagon, it was not enough simply to dust the cobwebs off this Lerner and Lowe relic. Bludon also assigned singing roles to Clint Eastwood and to Lee Marvin. The resulting movie was an absolute fiasco. For hours on end, I underwent the daily torture of watching dailies, looking on numbly as these two veteran tone-deaf actors lamely tried to give life to their ballads. The final film had to be better than the dailies, I said to myself. And of course I was wrong. Darling Lily was even more excruciating. The Mata Hari spy plot was clunky, and the romance involving Julie Andrews and Rock Hudson was unintentionally hilarious. Andrews was conducting herself with the righteous aplomb of the governess from The Sound of Music, and it already was getting out that Hudson was not exactly captivated by women in general, and by Andrews in particular. The critical rejection of these anachronisms was blistering, and Bludon was not one to take ridicule gently. Even as he flared at the press, he was also conjuring up some intriguing ways to bury the losses. First, he tried to sell off a half-interest in Darling Lily to an Italian hood named Michele Sindona, who was later to die in jail. When that scam fell apart, he again sold the rights to the film in return for $31.2 million in debentures in a company called Commonwealth United, in which Bludon had a major interest. Not surprisingly, the SEC ultimately closed in on this and other Bludon schemes. For a while, it looked like he too might end up in jail, although that never became a reality. Yet a visit to Bludon's office in that period would always be interrupted by top-of-the-lung confrontations with attorneys or government investigators. He would simultaneously be conducting a negotiation for a film project, rebuffing an SEC attorney, and trading millions of dollars in securities, all the while pacing his office like a caged animal. Bludon clearly was a man who courted danger, and hence was dangerous to be around. He seemed happiness when he was holding court at his estate in the Dominican Republic, regaling his guests with stories even as scores of machine-gun-toting guards patrol the periphery of his property.